Well, hi and good evening, everyone here. It's evening in Finland, and we're having our Wednesday triangles day, I guess. And fortunately, I seem to be here at this time rather than somewhere else. Well, we the material gets intricate, no question about it, but I think that with the development of pure reason, which is a very I want to call it very articulated kind of intuition, many things that just seem like a lot of facts do fall into patterns, and they can be apprehended along the secondary line. We call it the ray of the divine pattern. And then many things start to come together into a unity, and things don't look so confusing. So that's one of the, obviously DK has taken his extensive knowledge and try to present it to us both in patterns and in articulable little pieces. And it's up to us to somehow put it all together, which I think we can do given study with him. I just want to, I tell you what, the first thing I want to do is just that we'll have just a moment of quiet as we let, the additional people come aboard and realize that we're going to work together now in some academic way on the science of triangles. And we will try to be, very perceptive and trusting that these items of information will not remain dissociated from each other, but which but will fall into patterns which are identifiable and will help us when we look at just many thousands of items will help us bring them into a picture that can be understood. And, without, I mean, it always takes some labor, of course, but without the sense of being overwhelmed by all the particulars. This is what's important, that we have the kind of the geometry of relationship gathering strength within our consciousness. So I just want to welcome you, briefly here. Al, hi, and Marie and Annette, and Antoinette, Catherine, Chris, Christopher, Gretchen, Karen, Carrie, Mariana, Marissa, Martha, Natia, Nessa, Anienka, Suzanne, Tia, TU, Winnie, Zenaide, and Anne Veronica. Welcome to you all. And over here on this, on the other side, making sure we are guided between the, what is it, Scylla and Charybdis, the rock and the hard place, or the rock and the whirlpool, that the venturers in the Iliad had to cross, were guided through safely without big electronic mishaps. So we have reached the point of a new section, and I just want to say that thank you, Joe and Michael, for being there and supporting us. We have reached the point of a new section, the triangles and the centers. It seems that this whole subject is systemically and cosmically considered inseparable from astrology. And I don't know if you signed up for astrology, but here it is as the substratum of the science of triangles. I mean, there every astrological factor really is a chakra, and the chakra in some system. And when we begin to relate these in triangles, it's the same as what we do in relation to the etheric body. So the mind has to expand, and many space has to be given for many details. And then under the intuition of pure reason, they begin to form the patterns that we are looking for and which help us remember and help us relate the energies to each other. So we're just going to sort of read along, and let's take some notes if you need to. I would, you know, I'm always taking notes. I'm always writing things in the margins to remind myself of perhaps a useful, fleeting thought, which I won't remember if I don't write things down, you know. And the old story about Beethoven, as he went out composing, he would be looking for themes, you know. So he loved to walk in the Vienna woods, and he would always carry his notebook with him in case intuitively some melody or some theme came to him, and he would record it lest it escape. And so easily they do escape. So if anything seems of interest to you, just make note of it, and it will all come together later. So the triangles and the centers. It is necessary to remember that all influences which impinge upon the individual or upon humanity as a whole pass through or are transmitted by one or other of the planetary centers. He starts to give us what they are, and if some of you have been in the back of Esoteric Psychology Volume 1, you will find just some amazing correspondences which seem to vary from the correspondences we usually use. And he assures us that these are not incorrect, but are given the way they are given because of their different placement within time. For instance, I'll give you an example. If Venus is given as the heart center of our solar logos, or associated with that heart center, which I think it is not quite yet, it one day will be. Right now is Jupiter, and Venus is associated more with the solar plexus center, but the day will come in the development of the chakras of our solar system when Venus will uphold that particular position. So reference to time, without saying it is a reference to time, is a great way of blinding the facts and of making us search why this discrepancy. So whenever a discrepancy strikes you and you find that there is an apparent contradiction, consult the issue of time and say, when might this be the case? Because everything is moving upward on the path of, what can I call it? I want to call it emanative retraction. So, you know, once the turn is made, all moves upwards on the path of emanative retraction. And, you know, it's just like being in an organization. At first, when you come in, you may be running to get coffee for people who are having meetings. But before you know it, your function is elevated. And even, you know, one day you may be the CEO of the entire organization. So the entity stays the same, but its position with respect to other entities within the system changes in time and under the guidance of evolution. I won't deal with involution right now. Right now, I mean, one has to, but we're dealing more with the evolutionary tendencies, and our studies deal with the evolution of the aspirant disciple and the group and the evolution of humanity as a whole. So that's maybe enough to stay with, except when we have a specific study regarding the outpourings. There's some charts early in the Cosmic Fire book that show that. It is necessary to remember that they are all transmitted. If we receive it, it's coming through a planetary center. Now, is it coming from Shambhala? Well, in as much as everything comes from Shambhala, yes, but not as people imagine. So much we receive is from humanity or from, let's say, the animal kingdom, but increasingly from the kingdom of souls and from the heart center or the hierarchy. Influences may begin to impinge upon our consciousness and change everything in how we perceive. He says here, I've said little about these centers because it's so, you know, it's complicated and the rays keep changing and you wonder, he just said something opposite to that. Why is he saying this? But we have to suspend our judgment until our knowledge widens. I've said little about these centers save to refer to the major three centers, which we call Shambhala, hierarchy, and humanity. And we recognize them as Shambhala, power and purpose, the planetary head center. And notice here the way the word directing is used, directing will. It doesn't appear again because it's in the superior position. It's all directed from Shambhala. And the other centers are responsive to it and are impulsed by it. So this, you know, this is that all-important triangle which is reflected in the spiritual hierarchy of our planet, through the Manu, the Bodhisattva, and the Mahachohan, and the Christ being the Bodhisattva and the Master are, at this time, the Mahachohan. And I'm not, you know, is it Vaivasvata Manu or some name like that? I'm not sure whether that office has recently changed. They are much longer in duration than the term of office of a Bodhisattva. So we have hierarchy, and its energy is that of love and wisdom. It is the planetary heart center, even though life pours through the heart center, and it does have a first-ray component as well as a second-ray, a directed love. It is directed by the will, but those who are within hierarchy can, under the impulse of the will to good, direct the love energy towards its objective. And we can be very sure that humanity at this present time is an objective for that energy current we call divine love and which comes from the hierarchy. And then we have humanity, and its key quality is intelligence. And it's called the planetary ajna center. Now, at other times, it's called the planetary throat center or at least maybe within the chakra system of Sanat Kumara, who is himself an emanation, it is the throat center. Maybe he's talking about the planetary logos as a whole. And it is directed mind, mind under the impulse of love and under the greater impulse of will. And those within humanity are learning how to direct their minds towards some target where it is needed. And they do that under the mantram, energy follows thought. Just think about that for a second. Energy follows thought in the direction that you think. You know, when you say, I'm thinking of you, a stream of energy is flowing towards the object. So when we're using the word directing and directed, the will is involved. Now, of the monadic types, the three major monadic types, we're told that the first ray monad is the director. The second ray monad is the teacher, and the third ray monad is the manipulator, or you might say, giving it maybe a nicer name, before the word manipulation fell into disfavor, you might say the creator, because the third ray is called the ray of creative intelligence. That's the name that DK prefers. So usually it's these four centers and related to kingdoms, really. Humanity, the fourth kingdom, and going up to the fifth hierarchy, the fifth kingdom, and going up to the sixth in a way, and Shambhala, the seventh kingdom, and including the sixth. So we should, you know, memorize those kingdoms, of course. We know the lower ones, you know, mineral, vegetable, animal, human, but then the kingdom of souls, number five, the kingdom of planetary lives, number six, and the kingdom of solar lives, number seven, because in Shambhala, there is a solar connection, and Sanat Kumara is considered to be a direct disciple of the solar logos. And we could see, you know, Sanat Kumara is mysterious because is he the planetary logos or is he not? Probably five different things are said about what the Sanat Kumara really is, and they all involve different aspects of the planetary logos. So I don't know if we can solve that exactly, except to realize he is the great sacrifice, and he's the highest example of the teaching ray upon our planet. Four other centers remain to be considered. The planetary throat center, which usually humanity somehow is given that position, and only a very special group within humanity called the New Group of World Servers is given the Ajna position. But then, you know, it may be just a question of the timing of things, and maybe humanity is indeed, as it advances spiritually, meant to be the Ajna center. So, you know, and right now he sometimes says animal is the throat center. But when we look at how the throat is used by the animal kingdom, it's certainly nowhere near how it is used in the human kingdom. But one day it will be, you see. And so we're looking ahead. One day humanity as a whole will be the Ajna center. One day the animal kingdom will be the throat center. There is the solar plexus center, the sacral center, and the center at the base of the spine. So when we start looking at the appendix in Esoteric Psychology 1, we find all kinds of things, all kinds of correspondences, and you could spend a whole semester or a whole year just poring over those different methods of presenting the relationships. Okay, you have some notes? Okay, you have some notes and questions? I don't know if I have any answers, but let's see. In the planetary logoic life, because we're called planetary logos, it means that an intelligent system, right? A logos is an intelligent life or an intelligent system of life. In the planetary logoic life, as in the case also with the individual man, the microcosm of the macrocosm, that's what we are. But what is our macrocosm? Is it the planetary logos? Is it the entire solar system? Is it something much bigger? Is it the one about whom naught may be said? We have, it seems to me, as humanity, we have many ever larger, ever more embracing macrocosms. So let's just say, as it says here, as in the case of individual man, the microcosm of the macrocosm, certain centers are more awakened than others and vibrate in unison with systemic impulse more fully than others, because, you know, our various centers have to receive the solar and the solar logoic energy, and certain centers are more adept at doing that. Now, what I've said here in purple is that generally the lesser centers awaken first, except for the center of the base of the spine, which does not, it awakens early, but it doesn't fully awaken until the fifth initiation. So from extraplanetary sources comes the stimulation, and we do have to consider that our solar logos is, in a way, extraplanetary. Now, he's going to kind of tell us about development. It's probably going to be different on every planet, and different kinds of triangles will be active in the different planets, depending on whether they are non-sacred or making a transition between non-sacred and sacred, or whether they are in fact synthesizing planets, which may be the most developed of all. Now, we know basically that the lesser centers tend to awaken first, and as we get older, DK says, well, it becomes easier for the soul to work through an older body, maybe because the importunity of the lower centers is not so pressing, and more concentration can be given to the heart and the throat and the head and so forth, without the instinctual nature running away with the show. So in the case of our planetary logos, of our little sphere, the head center, the ajna center, the heart, and the solar plexus centers, and the throat are the five focal points of energy which are the most alive and vibrant. I think that's always the number five is constantly found. And why is this and not seven? It's because some centers are fading out and some centers are, well, fading in. They're not yet awakened. Now, the base of the spine center is not yet active in a higher way. And yet we saw on page 169 and 170 that it was definitely part of some triangles. Let's see if I can quickly turn to that, and we can refresh ourselves on that point. So let's go to 169. And we see the pranic triangle, and we see the base of the spine in a pranic sense active in man controlled from the astral plane, and even in man controlled from the mental plane. And then it begins to disappear, but it should be very much a part of the fifth initiation type. It doesn't say so here, but without the base of the spine, there just is no fifth initiation. So he's given us certain of the higher centers for different stages of man's evolution. And I would recommend, you know, that you remember these pages, page 169 and 170 of a treatise on cosmic fire, to look at the major triangle for each one of the phases of evolution. So now the base of the spine really doesn't get active in more than a pranic way. It provides prana, which is kind of interesting because you would think it would be more related to physicality per se, but no, it's pranic, and the sacral center is related to dense physicality. So there's a kind of cross. The base of the spine center is related to the adrenal glands, which are in a way higher in placement within the body than the sex glands, which are related to the sacral center. So somehow the base of the spine and its particular adrenal glands, the glands through which it functions, are higher in the system than are the glands for the sacral center, which is higher in the system than the base of the spine. Anyway, there's a cross going on there, and we're not going to expect the kundalinic work of the base of the spine center until the third initiation really begins, and we're not going to expect a climax there until the fifth initiation is taking place, when the link between the base of the spine and the highest head center must be achieved at the fifth initiation. As for the sacral center, what he says regarding our planet, the sacral center is slowly dropping below the threshold of the logoic consciousness, whilst the center at the base of the spine is practically entirely quiescent, except in the connection with its pranic effect upon form life. You would not be able to sustain life on the physical plane without the base of the spine center being at least somewhat active. But you can understand people try prematurely to force the energy of the base of the spine upward, and they're not ready for that, and a burning of webs occurs, and a setback of a number of lives in which relationships have to be rebuilt. So, you know, all kinds of untoward things can happen if our timing is not right. Okay, I want to also say, however, of the sacral center that, strangely, it is the home, initial home, of the mental elemental, that little life which is the life of our lower mind. So it has a very physical connection and also a mental connection. And it's coming to me that when DK was talking about one of his disciples who was RSW, anyway, this is a lady that we knew. She was the youngest disciple, and she lived the longest, and she was a Scorpio person, and she had this, she had a very strong connection with the Scorpio energy, the mental energy. And let's see, I had something I wanted to say, but unfortunately the phone here distracted me, and I will get back to it. But she was very, very solidly anchored. She had a seventh ray personality and a seventh ray physical body, and you could tell she lived a good long time, I think to almost 88 years old, and the base of the spine center in terms of prana was very active. She was a healer, and so forth. Okay, there's more to say, but I simply forgot it. I'm sorry, I got distracted. Okay, anyway, the fact that the base of the spine center in our planet is not much activated, what does he say, is practically entirely quiescent, tells you something about the status of our planetary logos. Now, what about our planetary logos? He's in a masculine incarnation. Venus is in a feminine incarnation. And this planetary logos has taken only one cosmic initiation. So this is not yet a sacred planetary logos. And it also tells you something very interesting, because not only is the base of the spine center of our planetary logos not awakened, but our whole planetary scheme within the solar system plays the strongest role within the base of the spine of the solar logos's functioning. So it will eventually be the case that although you can connect Mercury, you can connect Mars, maybe even Saturn and Uranus with the base of the spine functioning in our solar system, it's our little Earth which turns out to be the base of the spine center in our solar system and for our solar logos. So anyway, let's see. So this, it has at first in man simply a pranic effect and not a kundalinic effect. And there is some systemic kundalini arising now in relation to our planet and the solar system, but it's not what it will be at all. So the pranic effect on form life is the strongest, engendering the will to live, think about where that comes from, the urge to survival, and the vitalization of forms. This is what the base of the spine center in our planetary logos can now accomplish, and not the full arousing of the planetary will and its connection with planetary purpose. Some interesting things are coming. These facts will give you an idea of our planetary status in the great family of the central sun, and why our planet is not a sacred planet. And now he's going to say a kind of mysterious thing, which it's hard to pinpoint, but we take it at face value and we try to figure it out as we can. No planet is a sacred planet unless the center at the base of the spine, speaking symbolically, is aroused, and the great fusion of energies resulting therefrom has been effected. Now, is that also true of a human being? No human being really is a sacred human being unless the center at the base of the spine has been aroused, and the great fusion of energies resulting from the rising of the Kundalini has been effected. He says, I'm referring here to this particular world cycle and the period and to the state of affairs in this fifth or Aryan root race. Later, things will change, the numbers will change, and so forth. But it's a long time that we will have to consider the awakening of the base of the spine center. It doesn't happen even a little bit until the third initiation, and we have not even taken on our planet the cosmic second initiation, which I figure will be some millions of years ahead in the fifth round and will have something to do with the judgment day, the real judgment day. Whatever we've got going right now in terms of a judgment day is just an anticipation of that greater judgment day which lies ahead, and as you know, which banishes from the earth two-fifths of humanity who either have the concrete mind developed not enough or too much, and they are sent elsewhere for further training, and then really we're on our way to having a sacred planet because the number five has been fulfilled. We're told also we can't be a sacred planet unless we've taken the fifth initiation, but I tend to question which fifth initiation. Either a subsidiary, and we're in the middle of a fourth such subsidiary, fourth initiation, on our particular planetary scheme, and then maybe a fifth initiation is coming. Will it be within our planetary chain, rather? Planetary chain is what I meant. Will it be within our fourth chain, or will there be a moving on to the fifth chain? Now, all of this, needless to say, you know, all of these occult specificities are triangularly interrelated, and I've shown you maps where triangles predominate and give the internal workings of these various logoi. There's so many secrets that are implanted in the books. DK doesn't draw any attention to them. And if you notice them, you notice them. And if you don't, you don't. So he says, you know, let those who have eyes to see, see. Let those who have ears to hear, hear. But he's not going to make a point of it. If we study the maps, we're going to find certain things buried in the configurations of triangles and diamonds and stars and all of that, which could give tremendous occult hints about what's really going on. But I suppose he just doesn't want to call attention to it because he wants the people who study that to be ready to understand. He doesn't want premature knowledge out there. Okay, students of my books and of the secret doctrine, to which he contributed plenteously, must remember, and this is what I was trying to say earlier, that any contradictions which may appear are only contradictions in time. Now, we might as well really take that in, because the superficial reader will come to the Tibetan's books and he'll say, hey, he's contradicting himself. How can you study that? It's filled with contradiction. But this is the explanation. Any contradictions which may appear are only contradictions in time, and that when this time factor is properly understood and the student knows to what specific cycles the information should be applied, these apparent inexactitudes will disappear. And let me just put it like this. You have to be a master to understand this. So, you know, in the let's see if I can get this down to where it was before, and I've shown you before this diagram from AUM, which Keith Bailey compiled, and it shows you that the very height of what a human being can know, and a master is still a human being, is all knowledge. And the science of cycles, as they relate to this particular planet, are contained in this all knowledge. So the master has achieved not mastery of, but at least focus upon the atmic plane, the third level of the atmic plane. And then that master will know exactly what we have been talking about here. The inexactitudes will disappear, and he'll know to what specific cycles the information should be applied. And I dare say that when we discover what those cycles really are, we will be amazed at how much the master has to consider when gauging what kind of energies are to be applied at given moments. Because there are so many cycles which are, what I want to say, superimposed upon each other. They're all intersecting, happening at the same time, and some kind of calculation as what energy had best be applied has to work out, has to be fathomed by the student, and it's best to be a master to do that. What is true of humanity, for instance, during the third root race may not be true in the fifth root race. Well, as a matter of fact, you know, for instance, we're told, I think it's in the fifth round, that the base of the spine center will have five petals, not four, and the other chakras will be multiples of those five, just the way pretty much our chakra system now is multiples of four, except for two of the chakras. So, in other words, the numbers change according to the cycles. And everything we're given now is knowledge that is in mutation. It applies now, and now may be a long time compared to the life of a personality, but it won't apply then. So we have to somehow master increasingly this science of cycles. He's given us a little bit of information about it. You know that, let's say, that a third race cycle lasts 900 years, and a second race cycle lasts 500 years, and a first race cycle, either 1, 10, 100, 1,000, like that, you know, 100,000, and a seventh race cycle the same, you know, 7, 7,700, 7,000, and so forth. So there are different durations of cycles. He's talked about that. He's given us some starting points on page 26 of Esoteric Psychology 1. And we have enough to start piecing things together so we can know in a funny kind of occult way what time it is. You know what I mean? Cyclically, what time is it right now in terms of the cycles? And then we'll know how the masters can work with the divine plan. Therefore, he gives us the hint, all that can be done is to study and to relate. To study and relate, to reflect and to apply the law of analogy, knowing that when the expanded and more inclusive consciousness of the trained initiate takes the place of the present human awareness, then these debated points will be clarified. They will assume a true consistency and the contradictions will disappear. So I think that's very interesting. You know, he's telling us how to basically behave here. You know, what can we really do? And let's see if I can go back here for a second. Yeah, that's what I want to do. And when people come to you and say, well, here are the contradictions, this is the point to emphasize. That they're not really contradictions, they're only apparent contradictions because we are not aware of the overlapping cycles. So if you're going to have this kind of attitude, what do you need? Well, obviously, you need trust in the source, you know, faith in the source, but it's got to be an educated trust. It can't be just blind belief. You've worked with Master DK, you know, he's extremely learned and logical and truthful. So, you know, we have reason to trust. It's an educated trust. Admitting where one does not understand, which is so many places, and reserving until later the satisfactory resolution. Well, there's so much to be said here. I think I'll just do one more little paragraph here, and then we'll talk about some of these things. The planetary center, which corresponds to the one at the base of the spine in the human being, and I suppose this means on our globe, you know, because in a way, maybe our whole fourth globe corresponds to the base of the spine center, or maybe to the heart center. It's difficult to determine. The heart center is the fourth in order. Okay, of the major centers, but our globe is placed in the lowest position where we might find the base of the spine. So It's difficult to know exactly what it is, but we have a conjecture and we wait for resolution. The planetary center, which corresponds to the one at the base of the spine in the human being, will not be awakened until the seventh root race of the present fourth round. We're in the fourth round now, and we're in the, I guess you could say, the four of four. We're on the in the fourth chain on the fourth globe in the fourth round. And really, we're starting to make the turn towards the five, which means that an important turn has been made from the time of Atlantis, and that only when right relationship is established between the planetary sacral center, which is related to the third kingdom in nature, the animal kingdom. That makes sense, of course, because the sacral center is largely ruled by Mars, or later by Uranus, and the animal kingdom is ruled by Mars, and the planetary throat center functioning properly and in unison. And this will happen, so this awakening will happen. You know, as a matter of fact, he said that when the planetary sacral center dies down, all kinds of crime, especially crime related to sex, will be diminished by a certain percentage. And he gives the percentage. It's quite a diminishment. And then the solar plexus center of the planet will be receiving important stimulation. So we see that we really are on this planet an initiate of the first cosmic degree, and that later the solar plexus center will be involved with the heart center, and we will become the cosmic initiate of the second degree. And only at the fifth initiation will we be able to relate planetarily the base of the spine and the top of the head, considered from the planetary context. So, you know, in fact, that is where we are. Now, we should be as advanced as Venus, we've been told. And Venus and the Earth are really like twin sisters. And they should be equally developed. And Venus has completed its development in what I would call five rounds, but of the largest kind, not chain rounds, but what I assume are scheme rounds, going through all the different chains. Now, can Earth do that, or is Earth having gotten off to a difficult start on the moon chain, or run into trouble there? Must Earth go through all of the various root races and all of the various rounds before it is possible to catch up with Venus, if that is ever possible at all? But, you know, he looks ahead to the seventh root race in our particular round, and then, since counting from the top, the base of the spine center is number seven of the major centers, then according to the law of correspondences, that center would be awakened at that time. Well, I know there's a lot here, and I'm just relying upon the development of pure reason within all of us. It's a very high Mercurian function, and I know we don't seem to go very far, I guess, because I'm talking too much about associated factors, but at least the associations are there. And this, we are ending, I think, academic reading number 32 in the Science of Triangles. And we started at page 452 and have, what, made one page? Possibly. It looks like we're on 454. Well, that's good. Two whole pages. All right. So 454. And this today is the 27th of February, and we'll begin with Science of Triangles number 33 next time, and I presume it will be on the 6th of March. Now, once the conference starts its demands, there'll be changes in schedule, unfortunately, but that's just the way it goes, okay? And this will be the morning schedule for that, hoping to remember. Okay, and now it will be from 4:52 onward. So if you've been taking some notes or thinking about things as they have been discussed or anything that awakened your interest, then we'll be able to discuss those factors when sacredness really occurs. Now, you know, basically what this is saying is that the only really sacred human being, the beginning of that cycle, is the master. Before that, we're not a sacred human being, not even as an initiate of the fourth degree. There's still some clearing to do of the supernova that the causal body experienced, the clearing of the air, so there can be a revelation. That's the name of the fifth degree, revelation of the seven or nine paths that lie ahead. So real sacredness comes with the number five. And that's why it's so important that Venus, with its fifth ray soul, become the dominating planet over Mars with respect to the Earth. And we are right now fighting out that whole issue right in humanity itself between the selfishness of Mars and the sort of illumined, loving altruism of Venus. All right.
I'm not seeing any questions or hand raised yet, but I think it's important to emphasize with so many books and websites presenting the ability to raise the Kundalini.
Yeah.
It's important to emphasize that it should not be done until one is ready.
Yeah. If it happens naturally, okay. That's what DK basically says. And it's got to be done under supervision. And here's why. Well, you know, everybody just raising the Kundalini, but the whole thing is geometrical according to the monadic ray. So according to the major monadic ray, so will be the sequence of points within the various triangles, which should be vivified. And the master will see and will know and will guide. Otherwise, it's just a straight shot, and we're liable to, you know, get brain fever and inflammations and all kinds of things that can lead to death and to the destruction of the apparatus which has been built thus far. So we, you know, everybody thinks, well, I'll go faster. I, the little personality, will go faster if I just follow these Kundalini raisings. But it's like probably riding a dragon or riding a tiger or something. You don't want to come back from the ride. And what does it say? you know that old thing? There once was a young lady from Niger who went for a ride on a tiger. They returned from the ride with a lady inside and a smile on the face of the tiger. We don't want to be devoured by our ineptitude and our tendency to rush in ignorantly. And I guess it's the school of hard knocks. If you do it, you know, you're just not going to do it again. Anyway, and now, does anybody have any, thank you, Michael, does anybody have any questions in general about this material, about any associations that came with the material, or about anything in general on the path of occultism? Because, as I've said, everything leads to everything else. Don't be too subdued, you know what I mean? I understand that this is complicated material. I'm just giving it my best shot in terms of the associations which occur to me. Now, some of them may be correct or they may be incorrect. but at least we see what I want to say is this. Pure reason is related to Mercury. And the holistic vision that comes by following pure reason is related to Jupiter. Now, there's all kinds of little pathways connecting this item of information with that and with that and with that and with that. And it looks like a very fifth ray process, but there's a lot of the fourth ray in it as well, connected with that fourth plane. And we take up all this complexity in the hope that once we've used the fifth ray to identify the nature of the items that we are studying, that we'll be able to look at it all at once and flash, they will all come together in an intuitive, inclusive picture. Now, that does happen. That does happen, and, you know, the lightning of thought, Master Moria talks about it, and all of these links will be made. But you have to apply the fifth ray like a laser to get the nature of the items that you wish to see united. And maybe it's not everybody's cup of tea, but, you know, Master DK is the master of, I'm just going to call it meticulous entirety. That's the name he gives for it. And of detailed knowledge, which he says rather should be called detailed unity. That's what he calls it. So just have trust in the fact that if you study along these lines and are careful in doing so and make very clear definitions to yourself, that you will be able to see the relationships. And if you see enough relationships suddenly, then Mercury and its higher octave Uranus come into the picture and you get what's called a straight knowledge, the intuition. But I guess what I want to say is that straight knowledge is based upon a clear perceptive mind. There's occasionally a way that you can kind of leap into a non-sustainable, intuitive, sentient state from the astral plane. Yes, it can be done, and it comes unbidden. You don't know when it strikes, and you can't sustain it. Now, what we're doing with Master DK is we're building an edifice, step by step, so that it's always possible to move from Manas into Buddhi, and then achieve the Buddhi Manas, which is the frontier for students such as we are. It's a slower method, and it's more sustainable and more certain. I hope I'm being clear about that. Okay, it looks like we have a person.
Karen.
Okay, we have Tia here and Karen also. Okay, so I'll tell you what, I've got Tia. And she has written something down, and then it looks like Karen wants to speak. So first I'll deal with what Tia has said, and then Karen, I'll get to you and you can offer your thought. So Tia, you mentioned the raising of the Kundalini fire slightly around the third initiation. Is that predicated upon or related to the subjection of the dweller on the threshold? The person, we don't really subdue the dweller at the third initiation. As a matter of fact, if you look in the glamour book, the horrific thing is that we get the first real view of the entire dweller on the threshold at the third initiation. So there's no subduing there. As a matter of fact, we, the accomplished personality, actually become the dweller. But to a significant extent, we do make decisions at the fourth degree that give us mastery over the dweller to a certain extent. Now, I'm going to turn to something quite surprising. If you're part of the glamour group, you know, we'll get there, but we're not there yet. If I can locate this quickly, I'm going to say, a dweller Okay. Third initiation. All right. So here it is. The dweller on the threshold arrives at full potency at the end of this race, the Aryan, and in the lives of initiate prior to taking the third initiation. So this is not the one I want. Okay, here it is. Here it is. In the first initiation, I'm just going to, you'll see how amazing how the dweller kind of sticks around here when you would expect it to be gone. But let's just say once the soul-infused, completely integrated personality exists, then we have mastery over the dweller. In the first initiation, the disciple demonstrates that he has resolved the dualities of the physical plane and can rightly impose etheric energy, the higher of the two, upon physical energy. And remember that etheric energy can contain a lot of the additional higher energies. So this is the Lemurian initiation. And in those far-off days, this is what the initiates of the time tried to do, and some succeeded. Number two, in the second initiation, the initiate demonstrates that he can choose between the pairs of opposites and proceed with decision upon the middle way. So we know that these are the vertical pairs of opposites, not the horizontal, and that we choose to go the higher way, but are not so foolish as to ignore the requirements of the form. Now, in the third initiation, now this is the amazing thing, okay? In the third initiation, the initiate can employ the intuition for the right perception of truth. At least he begins there. And in that initiation, note this, he catches the first real glimpse of the dweller on the threshold and the angel of the presence. Whatever he saw before that time regarding his faults and his liabilities and ancient things which had to be dispelled was not the entire dweller at all, nor was it of the angel. In the fourth initiation, the initiate demonstrates the ability to produce completed onement between the higher and lower aspects of the soul in manifestation. Notice that the dweller is included in that, and sees the dweller on the threshold merge into the angel of the presence. And that is maybe the first really monadic initiation. A new relationship with the monad is achieved at that fourth initiation. But this dweller is still around at the fifth initiation, and that's what's really startling. In the fifth initiation, and here words fail to express the truth, so we do have an out, he sees the dweller on the threshold, the angel, that is as much of the solar angel as has been given into the egoic lotus to work with this process, and the presence merge into a divine synthesis. Now, by that time, we may have a Maya Virupa, a will-created body, or we may not, but he sees the dweller on the threshold, the angel, and the presence merged into a divine synthesis. So the beginning of this Kundalini process is just really just the beginning. That's all it is. And we have to wait until the fifth initiation before that synthesis actually occurs. Okay, so let's see here. I've got to come back here to, it was a question, and I want to just review that question before leaving it. And maybe it's gone. Maybe it's gone. Just 1 second, please. There it is.
She said, you mentioned the raising of the Kundalini fire around the third initiation. is that predicated upon or related to the subjection of the dweller on the threshold?
So the idea is not really, because the first real glimpse of the dweller and the angel is achieved there. And a glimpse is not subjection. It's only at the fifth degree that we have this synthetic merging, and it's then that the real raising occurs. So let's not any of us think that in this life or the next, that we're necessarily going to achieve mastership and this full merging of the dweller, the angel, and the presence. Now, I'll tell you what, I want to go to Karen, because I promised then, and Veronica, I'll be right back. Okay. Coming along. And yes, okay. And there we are. Karen, go ahead, please.
Hi, Michael.
Hi.
I'm not sure, I don't know what my question is, but this section, we're talking about triangles and the centers. And, you know, we've do all these triangles meditation, and I've studied the triangles for a long time in the esoteric healing, and I've tended to look at them, you know, in one dimension. And through the studies that we've been doing, and also the animation that Dwayne Carpenter provides, you know, in his webinars, it's helped me to, you know, see it from a different perspective. And
yes.
So, like, I guess I see that the triangles are really vortices of energy.
Yes.
The centers, every center, you said every chakra or is a center. And basically, wouldn't it be that triangles are also vortices of energy and therefore centers as well?
Every chakra is a vortex. And we begin, so if the centers are vortices and triangles are made of centers, whatever the centers may be, then it is true that every triangle is connected to the vorticular process. It all begins high. Now, you know, this isn't really where it begins, okay? But let's say this is the cosmic physical plane, and there are vortices, seven major vortices up here, and they continue their vorticular descent, creating subsidiary vortices, subsidiary, subsidiary, until we have chakras or vortices on every one of the four higher levels of every plane. And that's why it says, you know, 35 wheels of fire or something like that make a master. And then the inference is very clear that 42 make a Chohan and 49 make a Chohan of the seventh degree. So it all begins on the highest plane. But then the whole thing has a universal origin. And when we're talking about emanation, there are different ways to think of it. And one of the ways might be vorticular descent from the very highest possible level of cosmos, which none of our maps come even close to displaying. See, the hint here is that there are 10 dimensions to cosmos. And, you know, basically, You're looking at one of these dimensions right here. Now, when you go to the next, there's all those nice triangles, huh? When you go to this next one over here, you're looking at yet another and higher dimension, but it's still the lowest dimension of a sevenfold system, and on and on and on until 10 dimensions are fulfilled. And what if the whole process of becoming the part, when you once were the whole, is a vorticular descent? I'm saying that I think that may be a good way of describing it. It starts at the very top of cosmos. Well, how can you say top or bottom? But, you know, the highest vibratory level that we have, it starts there. And what we're looking at right now is the biggest map that we've got, and it is about 8 transpositions lower than the final and highest of the planar maps. Let's put it that way. Now, this is assuming we know what a dimension really is, the 10 dimensions of cosmos. But it's a lot bigger than what we've been given. We don't even have a galaxy, not even a galaxy on this map. We have just a subsidiary. Now, another way that I've thought that chakras arise is through self-perception. That's, in other words, a great being sees but part of itself and concentrates upon that, and that which it sees becomes an entity, and hence you would say a vortex. So let's take advantage of what Dwayne is offering, because he's a marvelous artist. He's got a great imagination, and he can present things in a three-dimensional rotating way, and maybe even one day in a fourth-dimensional way, and so forth, and we will learn a lot. So anything else there, Karen?
No, thank you.
Yeah, okay. Yeah, I mean, you know, it's well for us to realize that our flat representations just don't cut it, you know. And when we're looking at a picture of an egoic lotus, it's all very nice, but it's light years away from what it really looks like and how DK tries to describe it. So the best thing to do, of course, if our technology catches up with all this, which it probably can do a lot more than we think, that's one way to go. And the other way is to get into the inside of life and see it for ourselves without being deluded by the astral plane and so forth. That is the key approach. And eventually, as we rise in the initiatory ladder, we will get there. Okay, so thank you. I'm hearing pops and crackles. I don't know where they come from, but okay.
And Veronica writes, you said the sacral center is the home of the mental elemental. Does every center have an elemental, and what is that? The sacral center has also a secondary center, which comes in contact with the heart.
Yeah, it does. It does. You know, beyond a certain point, elementals are not involved because elementals are lower lives, you know? So the sacral center is the home of the mental elemental. The solar plexus is the home of the astral elemental. Let me see if I can find this, you know. I think, of course, he said it better than I can say it. So I'm going to just try to look up the words sacral, mental, elemental. Yes, and there's one reference, which is always a good sign. The sacral, here we go, from Esoteric Psychology 2. The sacral center, the mental elemental life, transferred later to the throat center. The solar plexus center, the astral elemental life, transferred later to the heart center. The center at the base of the spine, the physical elemental life, largely etheric, transferred later to the head center. So this is the reference, and he goes further with it, the head center, the mental consciousness, the throat center, the creative consciousness, the heart center, the feeling consciousness. Now, there are only three lunar lords, and they're composite as a personality, which man has to deal with. So, you know, the higher vehicles are not made of what we normally consider to be elemental lives coming from the moon chain, which have to evolve in their own way. Now, let's see. The evolution of these. Okay, well, you have this. This is on page Esoteric Psychology 2, page 304. So this shows you where that elemental has its original focus, and then the mental elemental is transferred to the throat center. See? So that's how this works. And we don't know the exact method of transferring, but we get the idea of the direction. Now, if I were to turn to page, not exactly sure, and maybe I'm going to miss it here, but maybe 844, something like that. I don't know. This is the place. And we talk about the lunar petries. Now, In a way, that's what they are, these elemental lives, right? And here, this is a marvelous kind of tabulation, because it gives the destiny, the evolutionary destiny of the different kinds of lives that we will encounter. What are they evolving towards? The lunar petries, their destiny or their objective. Let's see what it says up here. Goal, okay? Their goal is to become men. They will, in their higher grades, pass directly into the animal evolution of the next cycle, maybe a round, a chain round, and so eventually individualize, just like we did when we were manifesting as animal man. Their three higher grades will become animal men, and the lower four contribute to the quaternic forms of the men of the next creation. So that requires a lot of concentration, but we do see that they are lives that are transferred over from the moon chain, and they couldn't complete their evolution, and they are completing it with respect to the evolutionary trends in our globe and in our chain. The moon chain was the third chain, we're the fourth chain, and now we have a very complex chain life, because a lot of lives from the earlier moon chain were transferred over to our chain and have to undergo some kind of development in an environment which is maybe a lot different from what they would have used had there been successful evolution there. Anyway, it's, you know, you could spend a long time and a lot of attention on this particular map on 844 of Cosmic Fire, and you'll see some of the very high beings. You see, I don't, you know, I want to get into it, and I don't want to get into it. Maybe someday we'll do that. If you go to the Makara website, this is still in that area of Cosmic Fire, in which I wrote the commentaries out in a typed manner and didn't just talk about them. And so you may be able to find what I said there. I think it's probably in quite a bit of detail. And, you know, we're basically, take a look at this. This is only one more thing I'll say. Look at the solar petries, the solar angels. The highest three groups will become major planetary logoi, and the lower four groups will become minor planetary logoi. And this they do not alone, but in groups of 49. So they share their identity and become as if one being. So it's a marvelous map, and let's just say you can learn a lot from studying it, but not every chakra is associated with elemental lives, only the lower chakras, and then the transference of these lower lives. Let's see, where was I here? Oh, I got lost. Anyway, whatever page I was on, was it Esoteric Psychology 2, page 300 and something? Was that it? Anyway, you saw how from the mental elemental, from the sacral to the throat, the astral elemental from the solar plexus to the heart, and then the physical elemental rising from the base of the spine to the head center. So I hope that clarifies a little bit, Anne Veronica, that the elemental lives are low lives and are not associated initially with the higher centers. Later they are, but they begin in a lower position. And as it shows you, they just change position, they change function, and so will we. We may have a low position now, okay? And as our evolution increases, we take a different position in the overall evolutionary scheme. The overall evolutionary pattern, we are differently placed, like that. Okay, so that was answer to that question. Okay.
And I am seeing no other hands or questions posed.
Okay, opposed.
Okay. It's interesting that those three centers are below the diaphragm.
Exactly.
And so are related to the personality.
Exactly, exactly. Because these are unconscious lives, you know. They have not yet individualized. And what's really interesting, they may have individualized in a different way on the moon chain, because there were no solar angels on that chain intervening with the monad and the lower vehicles to create the causal body. The causal body, or egoic lotus, was created in a different way through an interaction of the higher, of the monad and higher triad with the lower animal man. And it was the same, or similar at least, in the previous solar system. It's only in our solar system, it's in our solar system and on our chain that it was recognized that things had fallen so far behind what was intended that the assistance of the solar angels was called in double or triple force, you might say. Maybe in every fourth chain, solar angels are found, and they're also found in other planets. But there was a concerted effort to really intervene and speed humanity along because of the failures on the previous chain and in the previous solar system. And, you know, what Madame Blavatsky says about all that is that we are like hothouse plants, specially cultivated in a hothouse or a greenhouse because of the presence of the solar angels. And if we didn't have them, we would be even less advanced now than the lowest form of man on our planet, who doesn't even have a solar angel associated. But the solar angels in the early days, they at least assisted with the individualization of some of these men who are, you know, they have the longest way yet to go. But without the solar angels, we would be very, very far back, and that was realized. And so they came in with extra force to bring more balance into the evolutionary system of our planetary logos. Okay, so.
And Veronica has followed up in writing, "So if we apply our concrete mind in the beginning, we use energies of our sacral center and later of our throat center."
That is probably correct. But let's just say that the concrete mind can be applied in the hall of ignorance. Show you what I mean? Okay. Here is our picture of the egoic lotus, and the hall of ignorance involves the first, second, and third petal. And the mental petal of those three is particularly the third. And so maybe at that time there has been no transference of the elemental to a different and higher chakric focus. And, you know, it takes a long, long time to go through those first three petals. The first petal takes the longest to unfold. I would say millions of years. You know, we've got 21 million years since we were individualized. Now, other lotuses come in from the moon chain. They've got some petals open, you know, maybe some of the early ones. They come in from the previous solar system. They have some petals open. And it just depends on how far they've progressed. But we're still dealing with the hall of ignorance. Now, what differentiates work within the hall of ignorance compared with work within the hall of learning? And the hall of learning begins to be aware of the higher of the pairs of opposites. There is no sense of God within, God the soul, I am the soul. There is a higher power within me and all that. Maybe God transcendent. Maybe in the second petal we worship some, you know, great power and do so maybe ignorantly. But in terms of God within, it doesn't really happen. God immanent doesn't really happen until the hall of learning. And then we are stepping out of the hall of ignorance. And it would seem to me, does the mental elemental switch its focus at that time? Let's just say that by the time the first initiation occurs, it has to have switched. As a matter of fact, by the time the phase of intelligent light, intelligent demonstration occurs, which at which time you can have a third ray personality, or you can have a third ray soul and not before, then I would think that the elemental will switch its position to a locus in the vicinity of the throat center. Now, what the technical, anatomical, physiological thing is there, I couldn't possibly tell you, but he does at least say that it is a connection with the throat center. Now, you remember that you cannot be a first or second ray personality or a first or second ray soul until the time of the first initiation is in sight. But well before that, you can be an intelligent human being. And although at first you cannot have anything but a fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh ray soul, or a fourth, fifth, sixth, or seventh ray personality, when we start reaching the age of intelligence, we can have a third ray personality, and we can have, or alternatively, a third ray soul. And then it would seem to me a good time for the switch of the elemental into the vicinity of the throat center. I hope I'm being clear. That was one of those really important items of information that rays one and two, somewhere in my AAB extracts, I have that. And I believe, I keep on wondering where they are, but I'm pretty sure they are on the Moria Federation website. And BL put them up there, a big collection of quotes from the Tibetan, which I think can be very useful for people to study. So maybe it's listed as AAB extracts. And I don't know, Joe, do you know, if you're here, where they are found? I'm always forgetting. And BL knows that for sure, where they are found. But I think on the MoriaFederation@gmail.com or MoriaFederation.com, they're found on the website.
It's on campus rather than the public website.
Okay, so it's on campus. Okay, well then maybe, can you direct us there? Or does one just kind of go looking or what?
Now, if one is not a member of the Moria Federation, it takes a login with a login name and in order to get onto campus.
Well, I'll tell you what, Michael. Would you put in BL's email address, and if anyone is wanting that particular AAB extracts, I think she can maybe direct, because she did it, you know, and I think she can direct us in the best way. I tried to send it, and it was just too big, you know, in too many parts. But you'll want that as students of the Tibetan. You will want it, and it is, I think, very useful. Okay. Is there anything? Are we all tuckered out here? How are we doing? Okay. There's just so many things to know, and just think how many hundreds, how many centuries Master DK studied to know what he knows, considered to be the most learned of the masters, at least with regard to the present masters. You know, and there's a lot of books under his belt, and he's got a library card to the library at Shambhala. I might be willing to pay a hefty price for such a thing. What about you? Of course, the price won't just come in money, will it? If you want to get in, you have to pay the full price. Okay. All right. Well, maybe that's as far as we can go right now. And we're going to meet on the morning schedule for this. And then right now for ASK programs, I'm handling those right now because Tuya is not available for that right now. So I will be handling that this week, and they will be broadcasts, but there'll be coming one more webinar, which will be in the morning, Friday morning, which will be the Dissipation of Glamour, okay? So if you want to deal with that, and I don't know, as you've looked out into the world, have you noticed any glamour? Have you noticed any glamour? Well, sometimes I don't think I'm seeing anything but things are heating up, and it's going to be interesting to see whether humanity has enough principle within it to do some significant glamour busting. There are really good people out there, and hopefully together they have enough strength to break down this retreat from spiritual principle that we seem to be noticing among the ambitious leaders, you know, and maybe their ignorant, fascistically inclined supporters. Okay? Now, I'm going to just have just a little meditation, just a little one, okay? And, you know, and I'm always saying it, there's a lot of information here. There is. When you read the Tibetan, you just got to expect a lot of information, and which is the reason that a lot of people don't read the Tibetan, because it's just too demanding on the mind. They for them, spirituality is something else. And I just read something the Tibetan said today. He says, among disciples, there's too much feeling and not enough thinking. That was the gist of what he said. So we don't tend to have the well-stocked mind on which Alice Bailey insisted, okay? We'd like it to be a little easier, but it's not easy, and we earn every step of the way. We earn our way every step of the way, and we have to pay a price, and that price is in time and energy and interest and whatever. If we're going to master the ageless wisdom, we have to begin somewhere, and at least to master the ABCs of the ageless wisdom, which Master DK has given to us. Okay, just a little bit, friends, just a little bit now, because as I say, this morning I did this, if you were there on the broadcast, but we tune in with the light. Maybe as if it is above our heads. One day we'll know the exact location of the causal body and its energy sources, but to envision this as above the head and flowing into the mind has been useful for some. And DK asks us every morning to just be quiet for a little while and visualize this golden, orangey, yellowy triangle touching the top of our head. We can visualize that right now. And the presence of the Master and the Solar Angel, or Angel of the Presence within the causal body on the higher mental plane. And we are coming in touch with the various triangles in our system above the level of the personality. The soul, souls are called triangles. The triad is a triangle. The monad is a triangle. All of these are in triangular relationship. And rather than visualize every single triangle that we're in, let's just, in general, think of our triangle network, the people with whom we are working. think of them in general. It can be one triangle, it can be 50, whatever. We think in general and send out the light and the love into our little network. And think beyond our little network towards the larger system. Think for a moment of all the triangles which are existing on our globe and between globes in our chain and between chains in our scheme and between schemes and between planetary schemes and the solar logos, and between the different solar logoi in the seven solar systems of which ours is one, and within the constellations of the cosmic logoi that are chakras or vortices in the body of the one about whom naught may be said. But it doesn't end there. It goes on and on, universally triangulating all the way to the top, or maybe we should say all the way inward to the most intense level of being that is possible. A universe of triangles. And we who are just freshly individualized, just a few million years, we're just beginning that amazing journey in a conscious way. And our path will be laid out for us. So, the main point is just many are the triangles, higher and more inclusive and more inclusive. And the great pattern is there, the pattern of the three aspects of divinity on our planet. It all ends with the Buddhas of activity and the Lord of the world, but it just keeps going. And together, thinking about the great network, but not just the planetary network, but much greater network. Let's say together the great invocation. Of course, it's best to be on mute because otherwise you get sound delay. But you can say it at your home or wherever you are. From the point of light within the mind of God, let light stream forth into the minds of men. Let light descend on earth. From the point of love within the heart of God, let love stream forth into the hearts of men. May Christ return to earth. From the center where the will of God is known, let purpose guide the little wills of men, the purpose which the masters know and serve. From the center which we call the race of men, let the plan of love and light work out and may it seal the door where evil dwells. Let light and love and power restore the plan on earth. So friends, thank you for your participation. This is just an abbreviated meditation, but the point is, it gets us to think in terms of the solar system and the local cosmos and far, far beyond and into the universe. We have no reason to think that the structure of triangles ends anywhere in local space. I think it is just ongoing because it unites the seer, the seen, and the seeing. The subject, the object, and the relation between. So, okay, tomorrow morning we have the reappearance of the Christ meditation broadcast. And then on Friday, we'll work with the webinar, Dissipation of Glamour. And that will be morning two. And then we'll have the Soul of Nations with readings from the Destiny of the Nations on Saturday morning, at least Saturday morning here in Europe, and then Attracting Money for Hierarchical Purposes. So very grateful that you have attended. There's so much to do, and we cannot let up. We have only 6 years before the Great Conclave, and we should bring ourselves and our associates and as many human beings as we can reach in the right way into a condition of receptivity to what lies ahead. And that we do by assimilating the teaching, meditating with depth, and applying what we have learned through meditation and study, applying in service. So many blessings, lots of love, and we'll see at least some of you tomorrow morning. It may be the dead of night for others, but okay, we'll see you on the broadcast. And onward we go. Take care. And let's keep on keeping on, as they used to say in the Arcane School. Bye-bye.